We made this.
Hey, Kathy.
Hey, Sarah. How are you doing?
Good. What you doing?
I think I'm going to hit some baseballs. You want to play?
I've never played baseball before.
I can show you here. Most important thing to remember is hips before hands.
Like this? Hands, hips.
No. Hips before hands. Try it again.
Okay. So, hands,
no,
hips.
No. Hips before hands. And don't choke the bat. Just say hello to it. Say nice, you know, how are you doing, Mr. Bat? How are you? Give it a try.
Like this?
No.
Okay. Hips, hands, and swing.
No.
Did I do it right? No.
No, still.
Oh, I don't know if I can do this.
Are you?
This is too hard.
Are you crying? There's no crying in baseball.
Oh. Okay. Let's just go record the podcast.
Okay.
The truth is in here. I'm your host, Sarah Blair, and today my guest is the real Kathy G, Catherine Glinsky. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Sarah. How are you doing?
I'm hanging in there. That was rough. I was trying to learn baseball, and it didn't go over well, but I think I would rather talk about the X-Files, so that's what we're here for, right?
That's what I'm always here for.
Absolutely. I am so, so excited about this episode. This is one that I've been looking forward to for ages, and it's one of my favorites, The Unnatural. such a great episode.
It is.
Oh my goodness. It originally aired on April 25th, 1999, so in the previous century. Oh my goodness. Can you believe it?
No.
That was a whole century ago.
That was just a couple years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was less than a decade ago. It's fine. The 90s are only 10 years ago. It's fine. This episode is the 19th episode of season 6. I can't believe that this is already here.
It's going fast.
We made it so far. It has gone by so fast. And this was written by David Duchovny, and it was his directorial debut. Is that right?
It is, yeah. Yep.
It's kind of a big deal for him.
Huge, yeah. And right out of the gate, he just hits a home run.
Right?
It's amazing.
Just knocked it out of the park.
He did. I might have mixed my metaphors there for it.
Both. No, it's fine. It's not cliche at all. We're not talking about cliches. Not in this episode. He loves baseball too, just as a human being. Right?
Yeah, he's a huge baseball fan. He played it in high school and college. And, you know, I read that both David and Chris Carter had wanted to do a baseball episode for some time. They'd been looking for a story that they could do. And David was working his way up to writing a whole screenplay. And so David was looking for a baseball story to do, and he was reading the paper and came across this story about this minor league player who'd hit 72 home runs in his career. But no one had ever heard of him because he was in the minor leagues. And this was at the time that they were having the home run war between McGuire and Sosa. So it was this hidden history because no one had heard of him because he wasn't a major league player. And so David got the idea to use that, spin that into this story. So making everyone's
awesome.
Dream come true, Chris and David.
Was that the player that was on his jersey, or was that a different one? I thought I read that the Josh.
No, I haven't.
What was it at the end? We'll get there at the end.
Yeah.
I'll look it up.
Oh, at the end when he's in the batting cage with Scully.
Yes.
That could
be. He's got a name, and he took the name Josh from that player, and then he's got the player's jersey on.
Okay. I didn't write down the name of that player, so I don't know.
I didn't either.
Yeah.
But it's on the jersey.
Okay.
If anybody wants to look at it. Anyways. Yeah, and Jesse L. Martin stars in this episode as Josh Exley.
Yeah.
as an alien who loves baseball. Just the best. Because, you know, if aliens were to come to Earth, why would they not love baseball? It makes perfect sense.
If they were to come to America, for sure.
Right? Because, you know, yeah. Nobody else knows baseball, right. Really, yeah. Do they? It's a good thing that you and I are recording this episode and not the people from the UK.
Yeah.
UK X-Cast crew.
I think there was some genuine genius in putting us in this role.
No, it was me begging. That's what did it. This episode, like, there's so much fun stuff to talk about in this episode. I can't wait. So I think I have a guess as to what you would score it out of 10, but I'm going to let you say what your score is.
I give it a 9 out of 10. I think it is absolutely delightful. I love, love, love it. But I think it's sort of paced like a baseball game. It's occasionally slow. It's not always riveting. There are moments that are going to keep you there and want you to come back. But it's, you know, there are some scenes that are just, they take a while.
Yeah. But I personally don't mind that. I know, I think it's not for everybody. Like, baseball is not for everybody. But, you know, like you said.
Yeah. I think what I love about it is the whole fairy tale nature of the story, the way it's presented, so I love that about it. And 9 is a pretty high score. It's just not perfect.
Yes, it is. Yeah. And I don't know that, well, Quagmire gets a 10 from me, but that's the only one I think.
I have 10s, yeah. But this isn't a 10, but it's very high. 9 is
very high.
Respectable.
I would say
story.
9 for me too.
Okay.
I'll stick with that too. And on IMDb, it gets an 8.6 out of 3,208 votes at the time of this recording. But I don't know, Kathy, I just was happening to accidentally scroll down and I clicked on the ratings and you can get ratings by demographic.
Oh.
Which I thought was fascinating. I had never seen that before.
I didn't know.
And it tells how many people voted for what number of stars. So 1,200 people, 37.4% of people gave this a 10-star rating.
Wow.
And, yeah. And then 838 people gave it a 9. And then it goes down from there. But what's really interesting is that, according to this, people who signed up or checked in as male, identified as male, and people who checked in and identified as female, they get the men gave it an 8.5, and they have 2,000 votes for the men out of all the ages.
Okay.
As far as women go, they gave it an 8.9 average, but only 521 females registered and voted on this. So far fewer females. And non-U.S. users, 1,400 people who are not in the U.S. gave it an 8.4. 860 U.S. voters gave it an 8.9.
Okay.
So
that's a whole lot of numbers there.
Right? Fewer women voted on it.
Yeah.
Is the gist of it.
Yeah.
Much fewer women. Much less. Fewer less. I'm an English major, so I know these things.
I wonder how that compares to other episodes. Is it just fewer women vote in general?
And many.
On many
I don't
them?
Know.
Yeah, so.
And many more people outside of the U.S. voted than inside the U.S. So I wonder if that had an effect. Because if they don't have baseball,
more people
outside of the U.S. are voting, maybe they didn't like it as much.
That could be.
I don't know. Anyways, I digress. I just thought that was interesting because I had never seen that before.
Yeah.
So, there you go. Let's dig in and talk about this episode because I can't wait.
Okay.
All right, Kathy. So, we're in Roswell, New Mexico, July 2nd, 1947. At night, we're playing baseball. It looks like we're heading for, like, a UFO crash or something. I don't know.
Yeah. I love how that starts out as you're approaching, and that's set out in the script. That is exactly the effect he was going for. You look like you're awesome. going towards a crash, and the glow that you end up seeing is the lights shining on this baseball game.
Yes.
This is very cool.
Plot twist in the first nice.
Yeah.
It's nice. But also, it kind of reminded me a little bit of the beginning of Men in Black, almost. Because you're, like, out in the desert, and there's maybe aliens, you don't know.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah. It always cracks me up when the ball gets stuck in the cactus.
Which,
that makes me laugh.
By the way, is the wrong kind of cactus for Roswell, New Mexico. Right?
They don't grow there. Uh-uh. It's fine.
What strikes me immediately with the teaser is the music. And I love the music throughout this whole episode. Mark Snow did such a great job setting the mood, I think. And yeah, that's one of the things David has said, that was his favorite post-production experience, was working with Mark Snow. So I thought
that's
that was
fun.
Really, and it really grabs you right from the very beginning. So.
It does. And you know it's going to be a lighter episode.
Yeah.
You know it's not going to be like...
Right, just the tone is set right away. So.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And there's sort of an old-timey feel to it. And...
Exactly. And so then we meet Josh Exley, who is a batter, and they're like, everybody back up. X is up.
Yeah.
Back up.
Yeah, you get the message right away that X is extraordinary. So that's set up for you immediately. And you learn that he could be playing in the big leagues that are just now starting to integrate. And he says he's just fine playing in the Cactus Leagues. He doesn't want to be a famous man. He just wants to be a man.
Oh, I love
it. And it's just, it's set up for you right there, but it's not out of place. It doesn't give away anything. It seems perfectly natural to the conversation they're having. It just happens to be the answer to everything.
It does, right? Yeah. That's why I love this episode so much.
Yeah.
It's all there. And he just, oh, yeah. It's so good. I like their, he's like, doesn't he say like spectacles or something? And he's teasing.
Yeah.
And I just love the whole tone of the scene.
Mm-hmm.
They just look like they're having so much fun and it makes me happy.
They're playing baseball because they love to play baseball.
Mm-hmm.
It's clear.
Because there's no spectators.
Right.
They're just playing apparently this game for the minor leagues and they're just out in the middle of this literal dirt. Desert.
Yeah, there's
just
no stands.
Doing what they love.
No crowd. No hot dogs.
Right. No peanuts. No Cracker Jacks.
But we do have David Duchovny's brother.
Yes,
on the team.
That's right.
That was fun. He was piney. He even got some words to say.
Piney.
Piney. Yeah.
I love that. I wonder, does the name mean anything or?
I don't know. He had a different name in the script, and they changed it, so I don't have any.
I didn't know if that was like an allusion or just an inside joke, maybe.
Yeah, that'd be fun to find out.
The exposition comes through all the dialogue, but it's not heavy-handed. Like you said, it just flows through. Like we get, you know, he's important because they have to back up, and then they mention he's got 60 runs for the season, and we know that's a big deal. And you know. I mean, I remember Sammy Sosa and all of that. Like, I actually got to see him play that season
and
hit a home run. I know.
Wow.
It was crazy. It was very exciting. It was just such a big deal, and I remember that being such a contemporary thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nice that he was able to put that in and have a wider audience know how important that was.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. The audience at the time this aired was going to really be aware of these home run stats that were going to mean something. So we're
right.
A little far removed from it now, but
yeah. Yep. So so right away we know, you know, he's important and all that stuff. And then we get the KKK coming in,
and that is just shocking, that whole and to me, like I said before, this is, it's just such a fairy tale of an episode. And here's the dragon, you know, the danger, the dragon is right there. But it is a shocking, you go from this idyllic game that's being played, although you get the hint that maybe it's not ideal because, you know, Josh Exley's not playing for the big leagues for a reason. But then suddenly, yeah, you have this danger that's introduced into the scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, it just, I appreciate that, you know, they take charge of the situation. Like, the baseball players take charge of the situation.
Yeah.
And they are like, no, we're not going to stand for this. This is no good. And
right.
You guys need to have baseballs thrown at your heads.
Yeah. And suddenly the pitcher can hit his mark.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. It's amazing how that happens. But we appreciate it. And so I'm glad that they, like, make it clear that they're not going to put up for that. And I like that they, you know, stand up for Exley and all of the players.
Yeah,
you know,
both teams. Yep.
And they, yeah. And then we know, like, they uncover the main, I guess, I don't know. We don't know at the point that he's an alien. But
right.
They uncover the leader.
Right. Take the Scooby-Doo thing.
Yeah.
Yes. Take his mask off.
I like that when they reveal that he's an alien, you know that, like, he's a really bad alien.
Yes.
He's not one of the good alien guys.
Right, because of the whole scene, the way it was presented, you know that this is the bad guy. I can't believe when I watch this, every time I watch it, it shocks me that I'm hearing the N-word.
Mm-hmm.
And it was contextually accurate, but it's still, it's not something we would put in an episode these days. And that shows how far how far things have changed, that it's just shocking every time I hear it.
Every time.
Yeah.
And it's not even just once. It's three times.
Yeah.
Like, it's, yeah. I think about that every time because I'm like, there's no way standards and practices would let that happen now.
And even though that's even what that character would say, mm-hmm. we still wouldn't replicate that even in fiction. We would not do that.
Yeah.
So.
No. So I'm glad that we have come beyond that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that is the one part we get that they're, like, super, super bad because they're from the KKK.
Right.
And we get that right away. And then, you know, they just get him and spit on him. And I'm like, yes, spit in his face.
Hit them with the baseballs. Yeah. Yeah.
Get the baseball bat.
It's a very satisfying scene.
It is. Yeah. 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 To see them. Yeah.
It does set up the whole conflict very well.
It does, indeed. Okay, then we fast forward to modern day.
In the beginning. I just love that David's going with the dad joke because he's about to become a dad. His wife was pregnant with their first. Like, I'm going full out. I'm going with the dad joke in the beginning.
Cute.
Very.
And it works.
It did.
And it, like, I like the allusion to, you know, the biblical aspect of Genesis. And then he does make a lot of allusions throughout the episode about, like, God and baseball. And the baseball, they mention, like, the baseball gods.
Yeah.
And, you know, that kind of thing. So I appreciate that. Then we fast forward to FBI headquarters. And Mulder and Scully.
Yeah.
And I love that Vin Scully, that's really him.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely. Yeah, that is so cool. The way he described it in the script, it's a Dodgers game. We hear the tinny rendering of Scully's voice. Vin, not Dana.
And that's in the
so
script.
Cute.
That is
yeah.
precious. That makes my heart so happy.
And that this was
I love it.
Going to be set in the Library of Congress. And I understand for production reasons why they, you know, why create another set when we can just put them in the X-Files office. But I like the idea of Scully sneaking food into the library.
I do,
a little rebel there.
She would be more rebellious for that than Mulder.
Right.
And just seeing her lug that big old book around.
That big book down the stairs. It's so cute. So cute.
She is so precious.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love that they get a mention of Bellflower in there, because isn't that Chris Carter's?
That's his hometown. Yeah. They're just doing a really good job. It's a gorgeous day, a Saturday, a perfect sunny day, you know, setting up the whole, you know, lesson that Mulder needs to learn. Like, you get got to find some joy in life, not just hiding in the basement mm-hmm. looking for anomalies. Such a cute scene.
And Scully just wants to go outside. That's all. She's just like, I just want to go outside.
She Where climbs up on her little stool and looks out the window. And, why are we here?
Poor Scully.
It's so cute.
And at least she's got her non-fat tofu-y rice creamsicle.
You're right. I bet the air in my mouth tastes better than that.
Oh, man. I can think of some things to say about that.
The two of them are so good in this kind of banter. They're just,
they are.
It's fun and it's adorable and it seems so natural. You just get the feeling that these two tease each other. It's an extension of what we've seen before, and it's just the perfect place for it.
I feel like a lot of times that you just don't get to see the playful part of them enough.
Yeah, I think that this feels perfectly like Mulder and Scully. Yes. We don't see them in this kind of situation very often, but we have in other times, and that's mm-hmm. how they are. I think that's only normal to have lighter moments within... I mean, you're not going to constantly be under stress and pressure and life-threatening situations. And this just happens to be a sunny Saturday where they're teasing each other.
And we get to see it. Oh, how blessed we are.
We are.
One of my favorite things I did write down is the look on his face when she, you know, she says, oh, this precious Saturday, you've got us grabbing life by the testes and stealing reference books from the FBI library. And that look on his face, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I just want to eat it up.
Absolutely.
Just perfect. Just amazing. Yeah, it's good stuff. So finally, we realize, we have to talk about the cliches. Oh, my gosh.
Apparently, there's some sort of philosophical discussion about the cliches that Mulder's choosing. Mm. I can't focus on that because they're just so cute as they're having this little contest. I didn't stop to think about what it actually was that they were saying.
No.
No. Until
not at all.
I scream, you scream, we all scream.
Oh.
Let's take a moment.
Right? I just need to absorb that for a second. I love how flirty they are. I feel like this episode is a turning point. And we get the feeling of that here at the beginning of it.
I absolutely 100% agree. They're past all the tension that we've been dealing with, at least for a short time. They are enjoying each other's company. There's nothing standing between them. They're on the way to something else. And they're,
you know my theories.
I do.
About Redux. But, even if they haven't gotten it on already, I feel like they're definitely going to get there soon. So.
Relatively soon in X-Files terms. We still have a whole season to get through.
Canon, but come on. There's no way you get to the end of this
episode.
There's
no turning back. They are headed full steam ahead.
Sorry, no Romos. So, this is just, I love the scene so much. And then the fake sneeze and, everything.
Yeah. I love when he grabs the ice cream and they're wrestling. Because her little scream of, Mulder, so cute.
It's so real.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the best. Yeah. And he just wants an excuse to touch her. They just want to tussle. How many times do you think they've eaten after each other on Steakhouse?
Don't you think they do that all the time?
All the time.
Like, she steals his French fries. He drinks her out of her cup.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. They're so there.
They're people who spend all their time together. Whether it's... Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be romantic.
I just love
that
they're so comfortable.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're just really, really comfortable being together, and that makes me so happy.
And, you know, I think back to Deep Throat, where Mulder's in her... It's the second episode, and he's in her room lounging on her bed. They're just comfortable together. So, yes, they're mm-hmm. going to share ice cream.
Of course. Oh. Anyways. Yeah. Moving right along.
Yeah.
Ugh.
I love this little exchange... After, you know, she sees that he's been reading about baseball, and she says, can I ask you a personal question? And Mulder says, of course not. That's just such a funny little exchange of dialogue.
Right?
Yeah. It's like he's joking, yeah. but then he's distracted, so it comes out kind of serious. And yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh.
Very funny. Very cute.
Love it. Yes.
And indeed. Then he steals, yeah, the fake sneeze while he's stealing the page out of the book.
And she's just like, oh! Rebel.
But the funny thing is that she, if this was set in the Library of Congress, then she was the rebel by bringing in food, and then he was the mm-hmm. rebel by stealing the page. So it was like,
there's no way he would have gotten out of the Library of Congress with that page. Just gonna say that right now.
Yeah.
There's no way. Yeah. Wouldn't have happened.
So good thing they changed that.
Yeah. The FBI, I can believe, because in Milagro, he just walks in and, like, leaves a charm for Scully under the door.
Yeah, right.
And they're like, yeah, this guy with the hood on brought in. I didn't really see his face. I don't know who that was, but it was the FBI building that he just walked into. And we don't know. Some unidentified man, we can't identify who just walked into the FBI building. It's fine. So I totally believe that they could get away with ripping a page out of something and get out of the FBI with it. Makes sense. And I really love when he goes to, quote, Arthur Dale's house, because it's Arthur Dale's, but it's a surprise Arthur Dale's.
It's such a shame about Darren McGavin that that he was going to reprise the role of Arthur Dale's and then got sick 3 days into shooting and they had to be replaced. Because I kind of think that whole thing with, oh, I have a brother named Arthur Dale's, you know, two brothers named the same thing and a sister and a goldfish, whatever, is ridiculous.
It is.
But it is. Because the whole episode is a fairy tale, I can get past it.
Yeah.
And there's an interesting thing I read that when Darren McGavin got sick, the writing staff suggested that David just, you know, write a new character to tell Mulder the story of Dale's and Exley. But David said, now the whole thing falls apart if I do that. It has to be emotional. It has to be Dale's telling his own story. And he's right. It really wouldn't.
Oh, work. Yeah.
And,
definitely.
So David said, so I opened myself up to the ridicule of that stupid scene. But fortunately, it went by quickly. And I think he's right. We can all recognize it's ridiculous and it's stupid, but it was just a brief moment and it had to be done. And, you know, it's just a story anyway. So,
I mean, I think if you're going to write a way out of that, that this was not a bad way to go.
Yeah.
It's so ridiculous. You can at least laugh about it and think it's silly and enjoy it.
I mean, it could be Arthur L. Dale's and Arthur N. Dale. You know, there's you can make it work in your mind, but let's not dwell on it. Let's just move forward.
Do you feel like they were triplets? Because I think that would be in my mind, they're triplets, and then the parents are just like, let's just call them all Arthur so we don't have to get them mixed up. They're just all, if they all answer to Arthur,
that's cute.
Fine.
And that would explain why the Dales we saw in Travelers, the flashback Dales, is the same person as the flashback person.
Yes, because they're all triplets.
Okay, all right.
And then he says the other Arthur moved to Florida, and the goldfish, too.
Yeah.
If I ever get a goldfish, I'm going to name it Arthur.
Okay.
I like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mulder's baseball knowledge when Dale's is questioning it, giving him the test to let him in the apartment.
Mm-hmm.
I really do love that that's something that Mulder would remember and have in his brain, just like that, those stats right there.
Of course, because he's got a photographic memory.
Yeah.
So he knows all of them.
And I have heard criticism that, well, the only reason Mulder likes baseball in this episode is because David Duchovny likes baseball, and so they just invented it for this episode. But I don't agree. I think, well, in Home, we saw him reminiscing about playing baseball as a kid. And then Reed X 2, this is what cinches it for me, when he's trying to distract Scully, and she wants to talk about, you know, what's going on, and he says, hey, how about those Yankees? So Mulder is a baseball fan. Always has been.
Yeah.
Always will be. Okay. I'm sticking by it.
I'm with you.
Okay.
I'll back you up on that.
Good. But he's so focused on his work at this particular moment that the baseball seems like a distraction to him. He's like, I don't care about the baseball. I just really want to talk to you about this alien shapeshifter. And I like that because we can see this setting up of the lesson that Mulder needs to learn. We saw a bit of it in the first scene with Scully, but now we're seeing he's just so focused on the work, he doesn't have any time for the pleasures in life, and specifically, I don't care about the baseball. So I really love that. I think it's really well done, because you know Mulder likes baseball, but at this particular moment, he's not letting himself focus on it.
I think it's really interesting how Arthur Dales kind of introduces the idea of it all, and he's like, I'm talking about passion, and you got that passion for proving extraterrestrial life exists, and do you think that, you know, something like that can change the nature of who you are and, like, make you shapeshift from a man to something other than a man? And Mulder's like, what exactly has your brother told you about me? And he's like, he says they lay in bed at night talking about Mulder. I'm like, what even is that? Talk about, you know, oh, man.
I love Dale's line, what you fail to understand in your joyless myopia.
I love this, the way they talk to each other.
Best. And that's that was something that David commented about how well Walsh did in these scenes.
Right.
When he had no time to really spend with his character, and he was given all this really flowery language that he was supposed to use, but that he did really well anyway. When you were watching My Best Friend's Martian, I think that's when.
Look, that's the look I love. Oh my gosh! It's
best. The funny thing is that was a mistake. The script was supposed to be My Favorite Martian.
Okay.
But there was a movie out, My Best Friend's Wedding, at the time. And so he fumbled those and came up with My Best Friend's Martians. And David said it was just, he kept it in because it cracked him up. That it was just
perfect,
because
you can see that look on his face. He's like, what the fuck?
What?
What is he talking about? Yeah. And it's glorious.
Yes. Definitely.
So good.
And then Dale says to him, maybe you're not ripe for this. And Mulder's line, I'm so ripe, I'm rotten. I don't know why, but I say that line all the time. When I'm talking for my fruits and vegetables, I'm so ripe, I'm rotten. I'm always having to throw away a pear or something because it's so ripe, it's rotten. That line has stuck with me.
Oh, man.
I'm sorry.
I'm going to have to start adding that to my
Right? They're just some lines you have to repeat that make no sense to anyone but a file. Yeah.
Okay, so we get back to 1947. This is before the opening scene, right?
Right. This is a few days
before. June 29th and then July. Yeah.
Yeah. The teaser is setting up this important, crucial moment, but then he goes back to show us how we got to it, and then.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, I gotcha.
This episode always reminds me of The Princess Bride. Because you have the older man telling the younger man the story.
Mm.
And the younger man's, no, let's just get to the good stuff. Let's get to the good stuff. No.
Oh, my gosh.
Let's go tell the whole story. And so Dale's is like, focus on the baseball. The baseball's important. You'll see why. And Mulder's like, no, I want to know. Is this alien guy a shapeshifter? Who is it? Anyway, I always make that connection when I'm watching this.
Oh, my gosh. I never thought of that, but I love it.
Yeah.
That makes so much sense.
Right? Yeah.
Is this a kissing book? Well, is this a kissing show? We would like it to be. We would like it to be a kissing show, but that's okay.
That came after.
Yeah, I like that.
That's what they did after Later. The batting cage. Okay.
Yeah, they did. So he explains, like, he's here to be his bodyguard, I guess.
Yeah, protection.
Right? Personal protection agent, PPA.
I think that the race theme is just clearly set up for you, that there's this lone white cop in a uniform sitting awkwardly amongst all the partying going on the bus, the singing, the laughing, the joking. So it's just a very awkward situation that they're having to, and that it just shows, you know, okay, this is going to be important to the story.
Right. He makes the joke, but then he doesn't realize, like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have said
that.
Yeah,
did I go too far?
Inappropriate. Whoops.
Yeah.
But then they, you know, they embrace him and laugh.
Right.
And then we know that he's accepted. And then you
cut to the next, you know, there's a time lapse and then everyone's wearing bits of his uniform and he's wearing someone else's clothes.
And then also that part where he get the reflection.
Yeah, yeah. So he sees X sleeping against the window, and he looks and sees the alien reflection.
How do you feel about, like, the allusions to, you know, he says, like, you look like you ain't never seen a black man before, and then, so, like, how do you feel about how he chose to become part of this culture so that, you know, he wouldn't have to stand out so much or, you know, all of that, like...
X's choice?
Mm-hmm.
I think that since he wanted, he chose to stay... so that he could play baseball, then that was a good choice. I mean, it makes sense within the story. But it does also identify people of color as alien, as other.
Right. Yeah. And the idea, I think, that Dale's mentioned before, how, like, all of the greats are aliens.
Mm.
You know, I think...
Yeah, that's... That's what's coming up. Yeah, and the next very next scene is, like...
Right.
All the greats are aliens. None of the great ones fit in.
Right. Yeah.
That's an interesting way of talking about others, is they're the great ones, that they're different.
Yeah, it is interesting to think, like, well, if somebody is good at baseball, they have to be an alien, because you can't ever be that good at it. Like, Joe DiMaggio and Babe Ruth they sort of make a similar reference in Men in Black.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they say, like, Elvis.
Of course Elvis is alien.
Right, yeah. Like, all the great people are aliens because they don't fit in here.
He's not dead. He just went
extraordinary.
Home.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't think that it's, like, a singular idea to this episode.
No, not at all. It's definitely. Yeah.
We get Mulder tipping infamously poorly again. But this is, like, a dollar. He gave him a whole dollar.
A whole dollar.
A whole dollar.
98 cents more than he gave the guy in Bad Blood.
Right? Yes. Oh, my gosh. That's like
he didn't look at all happy about
it. He's so proud of himself.
I think he was thinking, if I had a quarter, that's what I'd give him. But all I have in my pocket is a dollar.
I know. And I love how he waves it and he gets so excited. He's like, this is a big tip for you, buddy. And the guy's like, the kid's like, oh, you're just a regular Rockefeller.
How much should you tip a boy in 1999 for delivering medicine? I don't know. Is a dollar appropriate? Or is it too little?
I don't know.
At least $2. It should have been at least $2.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Mulder's cheap. We know that.
And I like the transition, how he runs out of the apartment building and then he runs. I love all of the
transitions
and the directing and all of that.
Yeah.
It works so seamless. I think Duchovny did a really great job directing and keeping everything smooth and flowing and... Even though, you know, some of it does move slower at times, it's still flowing.
Yeah, we go back to the present often enough to keep us interested in what Mulder's learning, and then back to the past to learn the story. I think he did a really good job.
And I like that the two little boys are good buddies and friends, and they're hanging on to each other, and they're so sweet together.
Yeah.
And then the chewing tobacco. Oh, my gosh.
I love that Dale's is the one trying to fit in at this point. You know, he's trying to join in this ritual, and he fails miserably, but he really was trying, and they appreciated his effort.
Yeah, he's trying. This is where he tackles him.
Yeah.
Because he sees the guns, but he doesn't know they're just squirt guns.
So what does he say it is? A bee. Those bees. David Duchovny is still remembering that bee. Those pesky bees.
That damn bee. It must have been a big one. Oh, but I do like that he appreciates it, though.
Yeah. That was really sweet when he saw. He thanks him.
Then he gets hit by the ball. This is where he kind of starts to think, like, hey, something really is going on, because he starts to bleed the green alien goo. I like the exposition here, because everything happens for a reason, and it helps drop the clues in such a nice, easy way that you just can pick them up, and you don't have to think too hard about it. It all makes sense.
Right.
Amazing that an episode of The X-Files would make sense, right? You don't have too many questions to ask.
Right. I mean, the green blood is a really very obvious clue to us as viewers mm-hmm. about what's going to happen. So we don't need a big, long explanation. We have the visual cue. And then we go to Macon, Georgia, and we see this cop, and then he turns and, oh, it's the bounty hunter. And that's another mm-hmm. clue to us about what's going on without needing the exposition. It's really mm-hmm. very brilliantly done.
It is. It really is. And they, we realize, like, hey, he's stolen this child's identity. Uh-huh. So that's another clue about what's going on.
Right.
That he's not who he says he is. But we don't really know about, we've gotten the hints
right.
that he's an alien.
Right. We're, the first hint I think we see, other than the teaser where an alien's coming to get him, mm-hmm. the first hint that we see that's about Exley is the green blood, right? I think that's the first clue we have.
And the hint of in the window, but we're
not really
right. sure
that's
about
right.
that.
That's right. We had that.
Yeah.
That we had that already.
Yeah.
Okay. So this
yeah.
is just developing the story further.
Yeah. So it's just another clue.
Yeah.
But I like it that they just don't come right out and say it straight up.
Right.
They drop them in.
Yeah.
Like little sunflower seed trail. The scouts come, and so he's like, I don't want to.
Yeah, it's we again we hear he's not at all interested in the majors.
Yeah.
And he throws
mm-hmm. and he messes up on purpose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he notices it for sure, and then he confronts him on the mm-hmm. bus. And that's mm-hmm. the first tension we get between Dales and Exley. He'd already talked to the person in Macon and knows it's a child's identity. And he mm-hmm. says, "You're hiding something." That's why you don't want to go and get in the majors. So he thinks there's some kind of crime or something going on, something bad going on.
You know, he talks about speaking in tongues and all of that. And
I love that.
And yeah. Yeah.
I love Jesse Martin in this role. Oh,
I
love Jesse
Martin.
Let's just talk about him for a minute. Oh,
he's amazing.
He is.
He's such a great actor.
He is.
And that voice. Oh.
And
I'm
he was
so glad he had an excuse to sing in this episode.
And that's actually really funny because the joke in the script was that X was a terrible singer, but he sang with all his heart. He was just going to sing at the top with gusto for the joy of it. But David said when he decided to cast Jesse Martin that obviously he was not going to waste that voice. And so he
of
just
course.
Put him into – but the reason he got cast is because David saw him in a production of Rent. And mm-hmm. so – I love him. I think he's just darling. I'm so perfect in this role.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they sit down and they have that conversation, and he's talking about, like, disappointing your race and your teammates and all of that. And mm-hmm. he's like, wait, you don't know anything about my race. And it's so subtle because he's talking about being an alien, but he could very easily just be talking about being a black man.
Yeah, exactly.
And I appreciate the nuance there.
Mm-hmm.
I like it.
Yep.
I think it works nicely. Because it is important, you know, to, like, for him to lay down. Like, you don't know anything about that. It's layered.
Yeah.
This is where he really finds out, right?
The hotel scene right after that bus
yes.
scene. Yes. Where he sees X in his true form. Passes out. Wakes up. Passes out.
I always feel like maybe it's one too many times.
I do too.
Yeah. Yeah. If they just, like, backed off on one of those, it would have been really
right.
funny.
And the joke of changing into a woman, it was pretty funny.
Yes. Yes. And then the guy walks in
yeah.
and like, oh, man. What is happening?
That was good.
Yes. I wonder who that girl is.
Oh, I looked up her name and it didn't ring a bell to me. It didn't seem... The script talks about her, like, and she's really gorgeous. So I wondered if he had someone specific in mind as he was writing it. Because sometimes they'll do that. They'll write a part for one of their production mm-hmm. assistants and there's inside jokes in the script about it.
Yeah.
But I didn't recognize the actress's name when I looked it up, so.
Does she get a credit?
Yeah. Well,
she does.
Oh, I don't know if she did in the episode, but I was looking online.
She doesn't have any lines. But I like that he catches on so quick. And, like, he's so cool about it, too. Yeah. Like, if I just learned this dude was an alien from another planet, I feel like I maybe, I guess he faints, like, maybe six times.
Yeah, maybe you'd pass out three or four times. So, and that's, you know, that's a very good way of showing you something without telling you. In another episode, we might need exposition, but here we see Dale's passing out three or four times, and that shows us what they're trying to get across, which is that this is a shocking thing and he's going to have to come to terms with it.
Right. Yeah. And then he does.
Yeah.
And I like that they don't, because you don't need to spend time on that, you know?
Right. It would just slow it down.
That was enough.
It was.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's something that we remember about the episode. Mm-hmm. Oh, I remember when he's passing out all those times. So I think it was very effective for what it was doing, even though we're criticizing it for being mm-hmm. too much.
Yeah. Exactly. And when they get back on the bus, this is where he sings, right?
Yeah.
And they have that conversation in the back of the bus.
Conversation.
It is so nice.
The first unnecessary thing I've ever done in my life, and I fell in love. I love that. The whole moral of the story just right there is like, choose to do the unnecessary.
And do you notice how Jesse Martin, when he talks and he kind of laughs, he holds his mouth kind of small.
Yes.
And a little bit stiff. Uh-huh. And I really love that because it's so subtle. But when he's talking about that, you can tell he's not really used to being a human. He's not really used to laughing and smiling and right. having those emotions.
Yeah.
And it's just,
his race doesn't
really
even
cool.
have a word for laughter, and we're not even able to smile. Yeah, I think he played that really, really brilliantly right there.
Yeah. They sing, and the sound of the ball, and it hits the bat, and
yeah.
the smell of the grass, and
I never knew the unnecessary could feel so good. It's useless, but perfect, and I couldn't go home. I like that. Yeah.
It's the best, yeah. And then he sings that spiritual song.
Yeah, and interesting note about that, David called his friend Maggie Wheeler because she's his former girlfriend, but they're still good friends. But she taught gospel music lessons. She was an actress. She was in the episode Born Again. I don't know if you remember that. And she played Janice on Friends. Most people know her from that. But she's the one who helped him find that
I
song.
I love her.
Yeah.
And I didn't know she did gospel.
Yeah, and she actually...
That's amazing.
The episode William, at the end, there's the song Michael Row Your Boat Ashore. Is being okay, that's actually her singing it.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, isn't that? I like that.
See, the things you learn here on the X-Cast.
You betcha.
Amazing. Did you notice the TV commercial for Gray Bus Lines?
Yeah.
You can go home again.
Yes. It was so perfect because he was talking about I couldn't go home again, and then the song is We'll All Be Together in That Land. It, really worked out beautifully there. Oh, so they're back to Mulder and Dale's.
Yes.
And Mulder tries to sum up the story, and he makes it sound so stupid. still trying to connect it to this conspiracy. He's still not getting the point that it's okay just to love baseball.
Arthur Dale's line, you certainly have a knack for turning chicken salad into chicken soup.
Yeah, so good.
That's fantastic.
And when Mulder says, so is a man or an alien-human hybrid, the script says, Dale's looks blankly at Mulder. That was one stupid MFing question. And then Mulder, it's official, I am a horse's ass. Such a good scene.
I love all these philosophical questions he keeps asking, too. He's like, what is it to be a human?
Yeah.
What is chemistry and this and that?
Right.
And, you know, he keeps asking.
And you get the feeling that Dale's has some depth to him.
Uh-huh.
Even though his
he's
life
had a
currently,
while to be thinking about all this,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, he's currently just, he's not doing a lot. He's doing a lot of drinking, maybe, but he's got some depth, and I think he's enjoying this conversation, schooling Mulder.
When you meet an alien,
yeah.
when you're young,
yeah.
and you know they exist, he's known aliens exist for his whole
true.
Life, basically.
Yeah. And he's kept it
so
a secret.
I'm sure he's, I'm sure he's had lots of time to think about that. But instead, he's just having conversations with his brother about Mulder.
Lying in bed at night.
Laying in bed at night. Who cares about what's out there? Let's talk about Mulder. Let's talk about Mulder.
I can relate. I mean,
I can too. Let's be real about that. Let's talk about Fox Mulder.
I don't watch the X-Files for the aliens.
It's true.
Okay. When we're in Dale's apartment and you show the cut to the scene on the TV and you see the bounty hunter. So they're showing footage from back in 1947, and you see the bounty hunter shapeshift, right as he's putting a body into the trunk. That scene is from Colony. They took it right out of there.
Nice.
But then they go right from the TV through the TV screen into the past, and I just thought that cut was brilliant, the way they did that transition to the past. So I just wanted to mention that.
It is good. I love all of these transitions are so cool. I wonder how he thought them up.
I know, right?
He's got such an interesting brain.
One of the things he said was easy for him is that he only had this one script. Mm. Like everyone else who worked on the show in a writing and directing capacity was doing multiple scripts, and they're constantly having to write and rewrite and plan direction. But he had this one, and he could wait until he had it all perfect in his head to say, okay, I'm ready. So he had plenty of time to come up with these ideas.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Although, he was still acting in the show.
But as far as
he had no other camera angles to think about. He just was worried, working on this.
And it does take a while to set up those shots. So I'm sure he had plenty of time on set to ponder things.
Yeah.
This is where the clue comes with, the lab technician and Arthur Dale's and the goo, and it's not carbon based, and
and at this point Dale's is the one who sent it to be analyzed, but by this point Dale's knows why it's weird and doesn't he gets upset that the guy sent it off to be studied in Washington, because at this point Dale's knows, oh, we need to keep this secret for X.
And then not real Josh Exley comes in,
right?
Yeah. It's not really him.
No, it's not. It's the bounty hunter shifted into X.
Right.
And kills the crime lab guy.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. There's a whole big scene cut out of the script.
Ooh, tell me.
Okay, so the bounty hunter shifted into Dale's, who went to the crime lab and killed the guy, and then the FBI comes in, and they're interrogating Dale's because that someone had seen him. So all that was cut out and streamlined, and it works much better in the time constraints we have to just make that X, and then that's why they're coming after X. But so there were. I mean, he even named these FBI agents who were giving Dale's a hard time. But so all of that was cut.
Okay.
For time.
That's interesting. That makes me feel better about my own writing.
Yeah, there you go.
How many times have I done that?
Right.
You think it's so important at the time, and then you're like, oh, wait, why don't I just make it Josh Axley, and then it'll be,
Right, you just
and
cut
it makes
off
so
four
much
steps.
More sense, but it's so much easy. Yeah.
Yeah.
It helps to have people help you see things from an objective point of view.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
And this is where Arthur Dale's confronts Exley, right?
Yeah, he goes to warn him to leave town.
Yeah, to tell him.
And X just wants to play ball.
Mm-hmm.
Picks up the ball and starts tossing it with him.
Do you think he is not worried about it because he kind of knows and expects that his time is almost up?
Well, he tells Dale's that he's already talked to his relative. Family's more important. He has to go home. So I think, X doesn't see any reason to run because he knows.
Yeah.
He's not worried about the FBI. Because he knows that he's going to go home.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, I like the scene, though. It's just, it's really sweet. Because he says, will you tell your kids how I played the game? And
yes.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, so then the police come and they talk to Arthur Dale.
Right.
They're looking for Exley.
And this is, David said that, his intention was to go back to where they left off in the teaser, but John Scheiban suggested that why don't you recap the teaser at this point, remind the viewers what we saw in the beginning, and so that he did that and then blended it in with the FBI talking to Dale's about finding X, and they recapped the teaser mm-hmm. at that point before they moved forward in that story. And it did. And he said he was really, that's what he liked about having a production team with all the experience to work with, is they yes. had these good ideas, and that's one of that he pointed out.
I like that.
Yeah.
I think it works really nicely.
It did. It's a really good scene.
Because at this point, you know, like, okay, you're caught up to where you were, and this, we already know kind of what's going to happen, and it adds a little bit more tension to it, too, I think.
Yeah, and I like the way it, you know. Yeah, recapping the teaser, but then intercutting it with the mm-hmm. FBI and Dale's, it builds up the anticipation of what's going to happen next.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because even though we know what's coming, now it has the weight of all of the stuff that we've gotten to know about Exley.
Right.
And how much he loves the game and how much he loves being on Earth with all the humans. And
yeah.
it just means so much more at this point.
Yeah.
And it's really a nice way to work it all in together. And the next. Oh, I love this episode. So good. It's just so, it's so well crafted.
It is.
It makes me happy.
It is. There's nothing rushed about it.
Mm-hmm.
Every little moment has meaning. It takes its time to get there, but you realize that every step along the way was important.
Yes. And, okay, then he figures out where they're playing.
Right.
And he goes there.
Home.
He goes home. Oh. Yeah. And, the alien bounty hunter has this interaction with Exley and
show me your true face and you can die with dignity.
Yeah.
This is my true face.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he kills him and he's dying mm-hmm. and we see that he bleeds red blood. Dale's is already caught up to him and he's, no, don't touch me. My blood is like acid to you. And it's just blood. It's just red blood. I have to tell you what David Duchovny said about this.
Yes.
So he was using the image of red blood to tell a story, and it doesn't have a scientific explanation. There's no way to explain how Exley became a human.
Mm-hmm.
But it makes mm-hmm. poetic sense. He said it's mm-hmm. not meant as a literal narrative, but to convey that X's love of the game and of humanity made him real. I love that. It's just that's how I feel. It was the same thing about having the brothers all named the same thing. It makes poetic sense. Where it's telling the mm-hmm. story that we need to tell. We don't need to come up with a scientific explanation for how he became human. Although I think that that is probably a criticism that a lot of people have about the episode. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, it doesn't make sense. But to me, that's what's beautiful about it.
It never occurred to me that it should have an explanation.
Really? Okay.
Though.
Okay.
You know, like yeah. I never watched it and thought, you know, well, that doesn't make scientific sense.
Right.
Why? Like, I never ever thought that because it's not about that.
Right.
Like he said, it's about the poetry of it all, and it's about the idea that you can love something so much that it makes you a different person.
Yes. Yeah. It changes you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like Pinocchio.
Right. Exactly.
He's a real boy. He learned how to love and he became a real boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's so sweet. And that shot where he's like holding him mm-hmm. and then it like rises up and then it keeps rising and then it goes back to present day Arthur
yeah.
Dales and he's just like sitting there
yeah.
and he's crying. Like, that is my favorite part of the whole, like, okay, my second favorite part of the whole
I was like,
episode.
Wait.
That's my second favorite part after Mulder and Scully at the end.
I do love that part. And that's where you needed this to be Dale's telling the story because it's
yes.
so emotional to him. It means
it
so much. Yeah.
And how it all flows together with the spiritual and
yeah.
you just see that emotion. He's just crying and Mulder's kind of just sitting there and letting him have his moment. And just the whole, everything about it is just so beautiful and just
yeah.
good. And
now David had the producers loved that end, that scene with cutting back to Dale's, and
mm-hmm.
thought it should end there.
Nope.
David had to fight to keep the last scene, and the way he expressed it, it was important to show that Mulder had learned the lesson that was set up in the first scene, And the whole reason Dales was telling him this story is Mulder, we had to see that Mulder had learned this.
Mm-hmm.
And David, we can talk about the scene, but I want to tell you what he said about this, and then we can talk.
Yes.
He saw this as the opportunity to write something warm and funny for Mulder and Scully, something less formulaic. He said, and this is a quote, "I was tired of hearing the conversation between Mulder and Scully where Scully would say, 'Well, I'm a scientist. I believe in science, and science tells me this.' And then Mulder would say, 'Well, I go with my gut, and my gut tells me this.' I wanted them to have a conversation in which they were actually in their dialogue rather than saying who they are, to let the way they speak say who they are, and to let them inhabit themselves rather than perching outside themselves." Isn't that?
Yes.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
That's why it's the perfect
David Duchovny.
Scene. Yes.
It is.
Yeah.
That's it. That's it. And that's why it doesn't matter that they are being the way that they are. Like, they don't, they are being Mulder and Scully.
Right. This is just a different circumstance.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
There's nothing about this that makes me think, oh, that's David and Jilly, not Mulder and Scully. To me, it's just, no, this is how they are when they're enjoying life, not working
yes.
a case, taking advantage of a beautiful, precious Saturday
mm-hmm.
and going to the ball field and playing ball because
just hanging out,
doing the unnecessary is an important part of life.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Baseball jersey that he was wearing, I remember now.
Okay.
I found it. It's Gibson, number 20. And the player was Josh Gibson.
Okay.
Which is where they got Josh Exley.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah. So that's where, that's the, in the Grays reference. Okay, we're here, Kathy. This is it.
You've never hit a baseball before, have you, Scully?
Fox Mantle.
Of course
no, I haven't.
She has. But
show me how to do it, Fox
right,
Mantle.
Exactly. I don't know, Mulder. How do I hold this? Maybe you should get
you
behind
sure
me and wrap
like
your
this?
Arms around me and show me. I'm not gonna turn. She's not gonna turn that down. Our Scully's
no.
not stupid.
Very, very early birthday present or late Christmas present.
So cute. So cute.
Very late or very early birthday present.
Yeah.
Oh. $10 an hour he's paying him too.
Yeah.
He says, not a bad piece of ash. Oh.
That whole get over here, Scully, with the head tilt and the, oh. Yes.
Oh, man.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Whew.
My notes say, hoo boy.
Hoo boy. Scully was right. We know it.
Yep.
Hips before hands.
Such a, that whole thing was adorable. There's
all of it.
Where she's trying to figure out how to hold the bat, where to hold the bat. And at one point she says, I'm in the middle. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And I had this person ask me on Twitter recently, is that in the script? She's just really had to know, is that in, I'm in the middle in the script?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I'm pretty sure that was Jillian. They were just trying to hold the bat because it's not. It's definitely not in the
yeah.
script. But it just, it's such a cute thing. You can tell they're both really enjoying this scene.
Yes. Were you the one that said, did you send me the script where it said something like the actors know what to do
no,
here?
That was not this episode. What was it?
No.
But yeah.
But it was a,
I'm the
it
one
was
who
a different
sent it
episode,
to you.
Yeah.
The actors will know what to do with this. Oh, gosh. What was that? I can't remember.
Yeah.
I've read some
it was something. But I mean, I wonder how much. Okay, tell me, because you've got the script.
Yeah.
You've got multiple scripts, right?
I only have one version
okay.
of The Unnatural, but it's David's first version. The
so how much of it is on the page? I am
almost
curious.
All
I
of this scene is
yeah.
on the page. That I'm
wow.
in the middle isn't.
Yeah.
But actually, it's really cute. The first time they go to swing, he gets Mulder gets hit in the ass and falls, and Scully laughs at him. Which apparently they filmed and then didn't use it because it was just too much, but or he got
yeah.
rid of it or something. But
I'm glad they didn't.
Yeah,
I think it
no. This was much better.
This was perfect.
All the stuff about the problem, like oh, as you swing the bat, you'll your problems start to disappear. And as he's naming all the problems, that's all in there. It was all scripted.
Wow.
From the beginning. Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
Yep. Yeah. But I'm in the middle. Wasn't.
Oh. Yeah. That is just the cutest part.
Yeah, yeah.
And they get all snuggly. And then she says, shut up, Mulder. I'm playing baseball.
And that, I loved how David described this, too. And I'll read it if you mm-hmm. want to hear it. It was very important that there be something like an old-fashioned moral. The whole story is about how it affects Mulder and Scully. What did we learn? It was really important to me that Mulder and Scully have communication on this issue, but that it not be literal, and that the audience realize Mulder has called Scully up to the ball field because he's learned something about life. I wanted him to impart it to Scully without telling her what it is. At first, he's going to tell her, but the last line belongs to Scully, who says, shut up, Mulder, I'm playing baseball. As usual, Scully gets it. Like, oh, I love that so much.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah.
She just gets it. She nails it right away, and it's just the greatest.
And I just, yeah, it doesn't take a lot of convincing. I mean, she's playing like, this is stupid. Why would I waste my time on it? It seems pretty unnecessary. But mm-hmm. she's just having a great time. By the, you know, it doesn't yeah. take long to convince her. Okay, we're gonna hips before hands. We're gonna all these things we're gonna do. And by the end, she's shut up. I'm playing baseball. That's all that matters. Mm-hmm. It's just yeah. It's just so.
And she's so proud of herself yeah. too. Yeah. She just nailed it. Yeah. yeah, she got it. Yes, and this is one of the few episodes, maybe handful, that. It you get to the end and that created by Chris Carter shows up and your heart is just so full it could explode.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and the music starts, the picks back up again and the, we look out
the
into the sky.
Baseball turning to stars.
Yeah.
And,
yep.
such a good episode.
Yeah. It just feels
makes
good.
Makes me happy.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Just like going to a baseball game on a Saturday afternoon just makes you feel good.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Or watching X-Files on a Saturday.
Or watching X-Files with no lights on. On Friday nights.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. I'll watch X-Files any night. It yep. doesn't matter. But it was better on Friday night. Because you had the whole weekend to ponder it and think about it before Monday and you could talk about it.
Okay.
Anyways, it's fine. All right, let's hit up the mailbag and see what our listeners had to say. Carl Neer says, I love this episode. To me, it was a perfect combination of two of my favorite things, X-Files and baseball. It was fun seeing Jesse L. Martin, who was great in it, and it might not be everyone's cup of tea with the baseball, but it certainly is one of my favorites. Love the ending with Mulder teaching Scully to hit a baseball, too, as by this time I had fully become a shipper.
I agree, Carl.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Definitely. Chris Henry says, a great and underrated episode when the X-Files takes a step back. Chills out and doesn't take itself too seriously, it can create some diamond episodes, and this is one of them. A funny, happy, sad, and adorable episode.
Yeah, that I like that, that it's not taking itself too seriously. Mm-hmm. David talked about that. He talked about being compared to Darren Morgan, and he said they're both kind of hellbent on subverting the seriousness of the show, and that Morgan and Wong opened the door for that, and then Darren took it really farther, and David was a real fan of that, so that's kind of the tone he was going for as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maria says, I love this episode, one of my favorites, but I don't understand baseball. I never hit a home run. I think I can understand the love for a sport, because I love soccer.
Okay.
I love soccer. Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what sport, really. It's just
no.
the love of something.
The love of the game.
The love of something unnecessary. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. The love of something. We love the X-Files. Is it necessary? We would say so.
I would say so. But it's the same thing. It's the
yeah,
same kind of thing.
Same idea.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I could survive without it. I just don't want to.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Alicia says, this is a wonderful episode that combines just the right amount of humor and poignancy with a touch of mythology thrown in. Even though we don't see a lot of Mulder and Scully, when we do, we get a lot of bang for our buck. And with the year they had already, and with what was coming, didn't they deserve a lighthearted night of swinging for the stars?
Yeah.
Great? Yes. That's... Great guest stars, too. Yep. Great. David hit it out of the park with this one.
Oh, I love that.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Yep. Let's see. Do we want to... Let's see. Andrew says, this is an episode I haven't really enjoyed until recently. It's completely different from what I watched the series for. And it seemed like it was simply David Duchovny expressing his love for baseball. But there's this wonderful sense of warmth to the tale of how people from different races, both on this planet and from outer space, can come together and enjoy the same pastime and develop a sense of camaraderie. And for that, I enjoy it despite some other quibbles I have with it, like Arthur Dale's. 7 out of 10 for me. Yep. Okay. Kurt says, this episode has always been a bit of a paradox to me. It showcases just how much Duchovny can achieve. It's a really interesting concept. Exley has a wonderful friendship with Dales, but it's corny, overly earnest, and painfully slow. And to that, a sport I have no interest in ensures this is a difficult watch. I don't dislike the episode by any means. I just can't get into it.
That's what we talked about at the beginning, is like, is mm-hmm. it just that we're Americans and we know baseball? And mm-hmm. Yeah.
I tried to watch cricket when I was in Wales, and I could not make heads or tails of it. But so many people just love it.
Yeah.
I mean, at least in baseball, like, you hit the ball and you run in one direction, and you go around, and when you get back to where you started, you're done. Cricket, you just go back and forth. And
oh, really?
I don't know.
I think all you really need to know about baseball in this episode is that a home run is a good thing.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Let's see here. Robert says, one of my favorites. I don't think you have to be a baseball fan to enjoy it, but it certainly helps. The quizzing Arthur Dale's Mulder on the number of Mickey Mantle home runs hit and the way Mulder answers it is such a baseball fan thing to do. Not the shipper, but the end with Mulder teaching Scully how to hit it is one of my favorite in the series. Soundtracked beautifully by the spiritual, too.
Yeah, I did love that moment when Mulder says, righty, lefty, total. That was yes. Showing, okay, yes, I really do know about baseball.
Yes. We got a lot of comments on this, so I'm not going to cover them all. If you guys want to check out more comments, head over to the XCast basement. There are a lot. this is a well-covered episode as far as commenting goes. Sometimes we have quite a few, and sometimes we don't have so many, but this one got a lot of comments. So I'll let y'all peruse those as you please on our basement group. Overall, happy episode. Good stuff. Solid effort by Duchovny.
Yes, definitely. It's a beautiful tale told beautifully. That's what
Indeed.
I think.
With beautiful people starring in it.
I was going to go further, but I'm glad you did it. Told by the beautiful David Duchovny.
Oh, man. It's good times.
Yeah.
We have quality here at the XCast. So, well, Kathy, I think that about does it for us, don't you think?
I do. I think we covered that well.
Any final thoughts?
No, I just love it.
Yeah, just good. Just love it. All right, well, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter almost all the time. I'm Kathy G at Catherine Glynn's 2. And I also pop up in the basement group every once in a while on Facebook.
Awesome. And you can find me, Sarah L. Blair, on Twitter at Sarah L. Blair. And on Instagram at author.sarah.blair. And you can find the XCast on Twitter at @X_cast. And on Instagram at @TheXCastPod. As I mentioned earlier, the X-Files Basement, the X-Cast Podcast Fan Group on Facebook, or you can join our Patreon also and get access to our secret. It's not a secret. Everybody knows about it. Behind the scenes stuff. Yeah. So do that. It's good times. And that about does it, I think, for us. I will be back next week with Three of a Kind. And until next time, always remember, folks, trust no one.
Elsewhere on We Made This. Frame to Frame.
I mean, 2 years after he starred in this, Keanu Reeves became an action star with Point Break. It was only 2 years after this film.
Yeah, but Point Break is extremely camp.
Oh, yeah.
It's extremely overblown and extremely over the top. So Point Break is basically a homoerotic movie about surfers mixed in with a heist movie. So, you know, when you... I can see the lineage between them.
Yeah, so you're saying so there is a connection in tone between that and the sort of exaggerated style of Bill and Ted. Is that what you're kind of saying?
Like, that's what I was getting at, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you said it in better words.
Well, there are words on it. I didn't use bodacious, so I didn't get away with it. But...
Cerebral Jukebox.
I always like to draw from just as many different influences as possible, you know, just like... And that's just my taste, you know, I just like, you know, and I'm sure that's true of everybody really, but yeah, you know, like, so one minute I'll be listening to an opera aria, and next I'll be listening to a Timmy Mallet or something, you know? I don't really like Timmy Mallet, but I was just trying to...
I was going to say, have you got any sort of dark pop secrets, but you may have just given yourself away then.
Life's milestones.
I wanted to be a rapper called Razor.
Nice.
Yeah, my tongue was sharp like a razor, you see. Clever, right?
Can I call you Razor?
Yeah, I mean, if you want. I've been called much worse. So, yeah. obviously, I spelt it incorrectly because rappers don't like to spell things right. So it was R-A-Y-Z-A because...
Nice.
Why? Because my tongue's sharp like a razor.
I think that spelling as well almost emphasizes the Midlands pronunciation, razor.
Razor? Yeah, oh God, yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah, I couldn't even escape it in my alter ego.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network. The X-Cast and X-Files podcast was created by Tony Black and is produced and hosted by Carl Sweeney, Sarah Blair and Kurt North.
You can find the podcast on Twitter at @X_cast, on Facebook by typing in the X-Cast, and in our group, X-Files Basement, the X-Cast podcast fan group, and on Instagram at the X-Cast Pod.
Don't forget, you can support the show by becoming a member on Patreon. Our patrons get early access to episodes, behind-the-scenes chats with our hosts and a thriving community of X-Files, and other premium interviews and specials. To find out more and subscribe, you can go to patreon.com/thexcast. That's patreon.com/thexcast.
We are also part of the We Made This podcast network, full of popular culture shows, including our Millennium series, The Time Is Now. You can find all of our shows at our website, wemadethispod.com, or via Twitter @WeMadeThisPod.
Thanks for listening and keep watching the skies.